Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thanks for listening in. Okay, here is Dennis Hart with news roundup of local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune for the past week. Take it away, Dennis.
Let's start on this Friday the way we always do, with a look back at what made news in last Saturday's Ames Tribune. The Trib reported that a Nevada man charged in the arson fire that killed two girls in Guthrie Center last year was sentenced to life in prison. A jury had found 27-year-old Patrick Ryan Thompson guilty of two counts of first-degree murder and one count of arson. The victims were a 12-year-old girl and her 16-year-old cousin. Saturday's Trib also had word that an Ames man's memorial site was vandalized with gunshots on the one-year anniversary of his death. 19-year-old Teddy Perry had fatally shot himself last October along a gravel road north of Nevada. The memorial site that was vandalized is located at that spot. A week ago, someone fired shots through the man's memorial picture, and a mailbox where people could leave messages for him was also shot twice. Lights, trinkets, and other objects at the space were stomped on and shot at. There was happier news as well in last Saturday's paper, including a story about retired Iowa State University entomology professor Wayne Rowley, who celebrated his 85th birthday this past summer by jumping out of a plane and skydiving. There was also a story that Iowa State University students had helped carve 600 pumpkins for Ryman Garden's annual jack-o'-lantern walk, which took place last weekend. It was part of the Garden's Spirits in the Gardens Halloween event. There was another story about Iowa State University last Saturday, this one saying that the Big 12 conference had upheld a $25,000 fine it had imposed on the university. ISU had appealed that fine, which was levied after fans rushed onto the field at Jack Trice Stadium following the Cyclones' upset win over West Virginia on October 13th. And one more note from last Saturday's paper, word that One Heart Equestrian Therapy was planning to hold an open house last Sunday at its new permanent home on West 190th Street in Ames. Sunday's Tribune reported that researchers at Iowa State University had received a $2.5 million grant that will test a new method of producing bio-based chemicals. That could eventually lead to the creation of new products, such as anti-corrosive or flame-retardant chemicals. Bio-based products are derived from plants and other renewable agricultural, marine, and forestry materials. Also Sunday, word that several parents who lost their sons in fraternity hazing incidents at other universities were scheduled to speak Sunday evening at Stevens Auditorium in Ames. There was also a report Sunday about the wide variety of homecoming activities scheduled to take place this week on and off the Iowa State campus. That included a contest in which sorority and fraternity members covered themselves in body paint, then performed a chant or skit pertaining to homecoming. Also included in homecoming activities, lawn decorations, a parade, plus free food festivals on campus. All this in preparation for tomorrow's homecoming football game against Texas Tech at Jack Trice Stadium. Sunday's paper also reported on the pavement removal and replacement project on West Lincoln Way that was scheduled this past week. It took place from near the intersection of 500th Avenue to about 1,000 feet east. And one more note from Sunday's paper, word that Mary Greeley Medical Center planned to have an open house this past Tuesday for its new Crisis Stabilization Transitional Living Center, which will provide support for people coping with mental illness. The center will not open until late next month, but Tuesday's open house was designed to give community members a chance to see the new facility at 124 South Hazel Street in Ames. It will have 8 beds for people 18 and older. The Trib is not published on Mondays. Tuesday's paper reported that Democratic U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont came to Iowa State University's Memorial Union on Sunday. He urged a cheering crowd of about 800 people to vote for Democrat J.D. Scholten, who is trying to defeat 8-term Republican Congressman Steve King in the 4th Congressional District. Sanders spent much of his speech blasting President Trump, calling him a pathological liar who has no political beliefs and who is an opportunist of the worst kind. Sanders also urged voters to support Democrat Deidre DeGeer in her race against Iowa's Republican Secretary of State Paul Pate. Tuesday's Trib also reported that the Ames High School Marching Band performed its annual Band Spectacular for friends, family, and community members on Monday night. The annual show is the final performance from the marching band for the season. Band members performed a variety of songs in the school gym, then took their annual fall photo for the school yearbook. Tuesday's paper also had a feature story about a Huxley business that opened a few months ago. It's called Central Iowa Mopeds and Ballard Lawn Equipment at U-Haul. The story details how the two owners met and decided to open the moped and mower store. And there was a short story with plenty of pictures about trick-or-treaters who showed up last Saturday night at the Breezy Bay Campground at Hickory Grove Park. The Trib reported that even though the weather was brisk, Everyone seemed to have a fun time. The big stories in Wednesday's Tribune involved politics. Fred Hubbell, the Democratic candidate for Iowa governor, and his running mate, State Senator Rita Hart, came to the Iowa State University campus to talk about the upcoming November election. State Senator Herman Kornbach and Story County Board of Supervisors candidate Linda Merkin, both Democrats, joined the event and talked about their own political campaigns. Among other things, Hubbell talked about improving education and about his support for Planned Parenthood. Meanwhile, there was word that 44 county sheriffs in Iowa have endorsed Hubbell's Republican opponent, Governor Kim Reynolds. Among them, Scott County Sheriff Tim Lane, who said he's known Reynolds for years and called her approach to public safety, law enforcement, and local government beyond reproach. Last fall, 8 Democratic sheriffs had endorsed Hubbell. Also Wednesday, the Trib reported on a unique gathering that took place at a home on the north side of Ames. It was the first time in Iowa that all the recipients of one organ donor got together at one time with members of the donor's family. The gathering commemorated the one-year observance of the death of Mary and Don Perry's grandson, 19-year-old Teddy Perry. He had committed suicide, and his heart, lungs, liver, and 2 kidneys were donated and gave 5 people a new lease on life. Yes, that's the same Teddy Perry we mentioned earlier, the man whose memorial site was vandalized with gunshots. One more note from Wednesday's paper, the Ballard School Board has approved language for a special election that will ask voters to approve a nearly $20 million bond issue for school improvements. The board set December 11th as the date for the district's election, which includes the communities of Huxley, Slater, Cambridge, and Kelly. If voters approve, the bond issue would fund such things as additions to the middle school in Huxley, improving security at elementary schools in Slater and Cambridge, and improving and making repairs to the existing stadium facility. Thursday's Tribune reported that the Iowa Court of Appeals had upheld the conviction and sentence of a man involved in last year's shooting in Campustown that left 3 people injured. 21-year-old Terrion Javari Maxfield of Milwaukee had been sentenced to 20 years in prison after entering a plea in which he did not admit guilt, but which acknowledged there was enough evidence to convict him. Maxfield appealed his conviction and sentence, arguing that a Story County judge had abused his discretion. The appeals court rejected that. Maxfield was one of 3 people who were in a car that drove through Campustown in February of last year. Shots were fired into a crowd near the intersection of Welch Avenue and Chamberlain Street. Police officers responded and returned fire, striking 2 of the car's occupants. Maxfield and one of the other occupants later turned up at a Fort Dodge hospital. Also Thursday, word that about 400 people showed up at a fundraiser for the Van Ursveld family of Huxley, who lost 2 family members in a house fire earlier this month. Brett Van Ursveld and his 17-year-old son Daniel died as a result of the blaze. The fundraiser took place in Slater, and it was organized by American Legion Post 260, along with the Slater United Methodist Church. Brett Van Ursveld was a member of Post 260. The cause of the October 7th fire at the family home remains under investigation. The blaze was believed to have started in the kitchen. Thursday's paper also reported that Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds visited the Nelson Electric facility in Ames on Wednesday, along with other state and local Republican candidates. Reynolds said she wants to look for ways to make government more efficient and effective. Reynolds, who is a Republican, is being challenged by Democrat Fred Hubbell. Earlier Wednesday, she visited a cafe in Boone and Boone High School. She talked about a new apprenticeship program called Boone Edge, which is now being offered at the high school. The governor said the new program creates what she called tremendous opportunities for everyone. Also Thursday, word that recent dry weather has helped farmers get into the field to continue the fall harvest. 29% of the state's corn crop is now being harvested, while 37% of the soybean crop is in. But area farmers are still behind the 5-year harvest average. The corn crop is 4 days behind, soybeans are 12 days behind. Thursday's paper also had a visual reminder that this is homecoming week on the Iowa State University campus. It's a picture of homecoming banners that were on display on Central Campus on Wednesday. And that is your summary of the week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, reminding you that I'll be right back here on Monday with a look at what made news around the state of Iowa this past week. In the meantime, have a great weekend.
The fallen leaves drift by my window. The autumn leaves of red and gold. Kisses, the sunburnt hands I used to. days grow long, and soon I'll hear, oh, winter song. But I miss you most of all, my darling.
Dennis Hart for the local news roundup from the pages of the Ames Tribune. And we've been listening to Eric Clapton's version of Autumn Leaves, and who else could deliver a guitar solo version of that song? We usually don't have such a long music break, but I just couldn't resist that guitar solo. And if you've just joined us, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for the hour. Election time is upon us. Remember, vote411.org is the website for information. Have you registered to vote? Both Republicans and Democrats very much want you to. Voter turnout has become a major theme for both parties recently, especially recently during two campaign rallies that happened in Ames. Just during the weekend and earlier this week, Bernie Sanders came to the ISU Student Union last Sunday to support candidate for U.S. House of Representatives J.D. Scholten and candidate for Secretary of State Deidre Dejar. On Wednesday, Governor Kim Reynolds held a rally in Ames at Nelson Electric together with other Republicans such as Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Naig and Lieutenant Governor Adam Gregg. So we're going to hear a little bit from both of those rallies. First, here are excerpts from the speech by Senator Bernie Sanders. Lots of people were wondering how presidential he was feeling when he spoke, and he sounded awfully presidential. Sanders spoke for about 20 minutes, and we're going to give you excerpts from that, so be advised what you're hearing is an edited version. We didn't change the meaning of what he said, but we did jump around a little bit and shorten what he said. So here's Bernie.
We win elections when people come out in large numbers and they look to the future and they want to create an America and a government that works for all people. And I want to say a special word to the young people in the room, because it is no secret that in a nation which has the lowest voter turnout of almost any major country on earth, where working people and low-income people, to large degrees, don't come out to vote, that the lowest voter turnout of any group in America is the young people of this country. If we did nothing more, I'm not asking for radical changes here, if we did nothing more than have people 30 years of age or younger vote in the same percentages as the general population, we can transform the United States of America. I am begging you, not only come out to vote on November 6th, but bring your friends and your uncles and your aunts, drag them out, because this, in fact, is the most important midterm election in the history of the United States of America. Democracy is not a spectator sport. And I want all of you to remember, and I don't want to be ultra-patriotic here, but all of you know of the millions of incredibly brave men and women who put their lives on the line not to support the authoritarian-type government that Trump seems to like, but they put their lives on the line to defend American democracy, a very radical idea, an idea only a few hundred years old, that says that our country is not going to be run by the same type of people who run Saudi Arabia or who run Russia, Trump's good friends. But that radical vision, that radical idea, that came with the creation of this country, that you and you and you, ordinary people, not billionaires, not kings, not czars, not dictators, but ordinary people have the right to determine the future of this country. That is what this election is about. Now, I know that's sadly but true. Iowa voted for Trump in the 2016 election. Now, I know that. And I think I understand the reason why. And the reason why is that many people all over this state and all over this country felt that their pain, their problems were being ignored by Washington and by the political and economic establishment. This morning, I had the opportunity to meet with a number of workers here in Iowa. And I heard from a woman I suspect in her late 20s, a single mom. For the last 7 years, she has been working and making $7.25 an hour. She managed to get an increase this year. And now she's making $8 an hour. Now you tell me how anybody can live, let alone raise a daughter, on $8 an hour. And the truth is that in this state, while Trump tells us how great the economy is, in this state and in my state of Vermont and all across this country, millions of people are working not one job, not two jobs, they're working three jobs to cobble together the income and the health care they need to survive. And what J.D. Shulkin and Deidre and I believe is that in the richest country in the history of the world, we're going to have an economy that works for the middle class and the working class and not just the 1%. Trump, during his campaign, you will all remember, he said, I'm a different type of Republican. I'm not Paul Ryan and I'm not Mitch McConnell. And I will not, if elected, cut your Social Security, your Medicare, or your Medicaid. He lied. The last budget, and didn't get a whole lot of attention. Media didn't cover it very much. The last budget that he presented called for a $1 trillion cut in Medicaid over 10 years, $500 billion in Medicare, and $72 billion cut in the Social Security Disability Trust Fund. Now, I want you to understand what a $1 trillion cut in Medicaid alone means. It is not only taking away health care from the most vulnerable people in this country, lower-income people and working-class people. It is also telling every middle class person in this country that when your mom or your dad gets old and has Alzheimer's or some other terrible illness and has to end up in a nursing home, you know who pays for that nursing home care today? Medicaid does. Nursing home care is $90,000 a year. You tell me if you cut Medicaid by $1 trillion, how the middle class is going to be able to take care of parents who need nursing home care. So when Trump said he was not going to cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, he lied. And the Republican leadership right now, if you listen to Paul Ryan, the leader in the House, what he has been very clear about, he said, is what we Republicans need to do is bring about entitlement reform. You know what entitlement reform means? It means massive cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Mitch McConnell, Republican leader in the Senate just last week, made exactly that same point. If we have the power, we're going to deal with the deficit by cutting Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. How hypocritical can people be? Not only do they lie during a campaign, they then give $1 trillion in tax breaks to the top 1%. They drive up the deficit, and then they have the chutzpah to come back and say, oh, deficit has gone up. We're going to have to cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And I want to thank, if I may at this moment, a personal thank you to the people of Iowa. Because when we came here during the Democratic presidential primary in 2016, we started off this campaign by knowing like two people in Iowa. And we were, I think, at 3% or 5% of the polls. But because of the 100 meetings that we had all over this great state and the many, many thousands of wonderful people that we met, we ended up coming out of Iowa with a tie, which enabled us to go to New Hampshire and win there by 20 points, which enabled us to win 22 states in this country, which enabled us to get 13 million votes, which enabled us to win more votes among young people than Trump and Clinton combined. Now, why is that important? Am I ego tripping here? No. Well, maybe. But why it was important in terms of what Iowa did in that very first caucus is that it showed the American people that the ideas that we were talking about were not radical ideas or extremist ideas or ideas that were outside of the mainstream. So it started off in Iowa and went to New Hampshire, went around the country. And ideas that just 3 years ago were perceived to be radical and extremist ideas are now ideas that are supported by the vast majority of the American people. Thank you, Iowa. And when we talk about the future of this country, I do not want to continue having discussions with workers in Iowa or any place else in this country who are earning $8 or $9 an hour. I want every worker in this country to earn a living wage. And when we started off in Iowa and we talked about the need for a $15 an hour minimum wage, thought to be radical. It ain't radical today. All over this country, we're seeing cities and states pass $15 an hour legislation. And as you may have noticed, Amazon just raised their wages minimum to $15 an hour. And another issue that we talked about all over this state is we said that in the year, then 2016, now 2018, same point, that in a competitive global economy, when most of the good-paying jobs that are being created require a higher education, that we have got to make public colleges and universities tuition-free. If Germany can do it, if Scandinavia can do it, if countries all over the world know that the future of their nations depend on a strong economy, and a strong economy depends upon a well-educated population, we have got to make sure that every person, not just young people, but every person in this country who has the desire and the ability should be able to get all of the education that they need, regardless of the income of their families. And we have got to end the absurdity of punishing young people for the crime of getting a higher education and then coming out of school $50,000, $100,000 in debt. Together, we understand that instead of giving tax breaks to billionaires and huge private corporations, we're going to lower student debt in this country significantly. This election will determine not only the future of our economy, our healthcare system, climate change, environmental protection, women's rights, etc., but it will do something even deeper than that. This election will determine what kind of nation we are, and in fact, what our deepest values are, who we are as a people, and what we believe in our guts to be true. Four years ago, we had the lowest voter turnout, midterm election turnout in modern history of this country. In 2018, here in Iowa and in Vermont and all over this country, our job is to have the highest voter turnout. So, brothers and sisters, you got 2 weeks to go to work. Let's do it. Thank you very much.
That was Senator Bernie Sanders speaking at a Democratic rally at the ISU Student Union last Sunday, sounding like he may be campaigning for president again. This past Wednesday, a Republican rally was held by Kim Reynolds at Nelson Electric here in Ames. About 50 people gathered to hear what she had to say. Here is what she said, and you'll also hear at the end of the speech, our KHOI reporter Susan Franson asked her one question and was able to get a response.
Thank you for taking the time. We're counting on you to keep the momentum and the energy going, because I'm telling you, if we show up, we win, Iowans win, and we're going to keep Iowa moving in the right direction. So we can't let up. We got to keep the pressure going, and I promise you that we're going to keep the pressure going as well. It's an incredible honor to serve as the 43rd governor of this great state. You know, Iowa is a state that's getting things done. This Republican team is getting things done. And I mean up and down the ballot. We are fighting hard every day to cut taxes while maintaining our priorities. We're growing jobs and wages and unleashing opportunities in every single corner. We're investing in education and our greatest asset, and retraining Iowans so that they have the skills to fill the jobs that are available today. And we're working hard every single day to find solutions to Iowans' health care needs and for some of our most vulnerable Iowans. I've had the opportunity as governor to not only travel this state, but to travel the world and talk about a place I love, highlighting the amazing things that are happening here. But you know what? It wasn't always this way. When I took office in 2011, we were facing a lot of issues. Iowans were struggling to find a job. Unemployment was high. The budget was a mess. Massive spending, debt. They had just cut education by 10%, the Culver administration. And Mr. Hubble, who was a partner in that administration, cut education 10% across the board. We can't go backwards. And that's what the opposition wants to do. They want to take this success, they want to stop it, and they want to take us backwards. I don't know if you listened to any of the debates that we had, but his answer to every single thing was more money, more money, more money. And when he wasn't talking about money, he was talking about growing government. Well, that is the absolute wrong direction. Iowa is moving in the right direction, and the facts are undeniable. We've been recognized as the number one state in the country. We have the second lowest unemployment rate in the country, which presents a few challenges, but that's okay. It's a good place to be in. We should be proud of that. We are the third best managed state. We are seeing incomes rise, 3 straight quarters of wage growth in Iowa, and we're seeing taxes go down. And let me tell the businessman, this CEO has balanced the budget. I have $127 million surplus. Our rainy day funds are full, and we're investing like never before in education, job training, and health care. So we got to work hard. We got to keep Iowa moving in the right direction, and with your help, we're going to do that. So talk to a neighbor, talk to a friend, take them to the polls, call, door knock, put up a sign, whatever. Because again, if we turn out, if we show up, we are going to be successful. So let's turn this blue wave into a red wave. And with your help, we are going to keep Iowa moving. Yay!
I'm going to use my press pass and ask you a question.
Sure.
How would you ensure a living wage?
Oh, well, we're working on that every day. So it starts with our schools, K-12. So I've been very involved in STEM education, science, technology, engineering, and math. And what I've seen with these programs that we have in place is especially a lot of children that have kind of stepped out, it brings them back in and it engages them, and they see for themselves that they're good and that there's a career and they can do or be anything that they want to do. Future Ready Iowa is the initiative that we passed unanimously this last legislative session, and it is designed to help Iowans get the skills to fill these great careers that are available all across our state. There's about 66,000 jobs open every single day across Iowa, and these are great jobs, and so it will help through last dollar scholars, through grant programming, apprenticeship, certification, a support system. So it really will help Iowans not only get the skills, but it will match them up with a job, and that job will be right here in the state. Thank you.
If you've just joined us, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts, and that was Governor Kim Reynolds speaking at Nelson Electric Company here in Ames. If Democrats and Republicans seem to have shared one theme at the rallies, it was definitely all about the importance of voter turnout. And here to bring you more on this very topic is Carolyn Myers of the Ames Progressive Alliance. She and others from the Ames Progressive Alliance host a segment once a month here on the show. Welcome back, Carolyn.
Oh, thank you.
So please introduce your guests.
Yes. Today our guests are Carolyn Kloss, who she's a leader with the within the Story County, and she's also with League of Women Voters. And Taylor Blair, who is the president of the ISU Democrats and a plaintiff in the voter ID lawsuit that is happening right now in Iowa. I'm also here with Betty Baird, our producer. Today we'll start with Carolyn. It's going to be a little confusing this morning. You have two Carolyns. You have me, Carolyn Myers, and Carolyn Kloss. So, Carolyn, can you tell me more about some of your involvement with League of Women Voters and your experiences as like an election judge for here in the Story County?
I do voter registration. I educate people. Beginning in August, I started going to nursing homes, assisted living locations. I've done five of the high schools in Story County with the senior classes, educating all of them on the options of being a senior and the voting this year and voting next year when you're a freshman, you know, at a college. Mm-hmm. Or if you move out, you can now register at age 17 and a half. So we register a lot of them at the schools also. And you can't vote until you're 18, but you can register at 17 and a half. And we've done Destination Iowa State, Women's Equality Day, National Voter Registration Day. If somebody asks us to come and do voter registration at an event, we'll be there. So we have kits. I call them kits.
Oh, that's great.
Has all the forms and the clipboards and the information on it. And then after we register them, I challenge them to be an educated voter. The League has the vote411.org website that gives you the opportunity to put in your zip code or your address, and you can go in and see who the candidates are on your ballot. And the League has asked those candidates for bios and then proceeds to ask them questions. So,
since you're so experienced with registering to vote, I'm sure that you know all about what was required to be able to register.
Well, to register, you can do it with an Iowa driver's license, a non-operator ID, or a Social Security card. You can register.
Okay.
Until tomorrow. After tomorrow, you have to have proof of residency. Proof of residency. You have to prove that you live at that residence.
But how do you prove that?
You can do it with utility bill.
Okay.
A lease, bank statement, an official document that you receive in the mail. That's not always easy. Most students don't get anything in the mail anymore if they live in an apartment. Some of them are not on a lease. Let's say you live in a home and your husband put the utility bill in his name. You're not on it. Maybe you don't have a bank account. You know, it gets difficult. But if you register today or tomorrow, you don't have to show that proof because they can document you with your Social Security number, your Iowa driver's license.
Oh, great. So today and tomorrow are pretty important dates.
They are very important.
Can you tell me more about how the registration has changed this year versus previous elections? Have there been any changes to how people register or?
Not in registering this year. That has not changed. The election has changed in that we no longer have the 40 days of early voting. It's now 29 days. It's a tremendous difference. 2 years ago, with the 40 days, we had two full weeks of voter registration on campus for students. Lucy Martin, she's our county auditor, would have done that this year. But when you have 29 days, it's too intense at the auditor's office to have people in her office working and people out of the office working.
You've talked about early voting. Can you tell me what are the various ways that people can vote? I mean, I know there's early voting and there's voting on the day of the election. Is there?
Well, there's no online voting.
Okay.
So the early voting is you can vote at the auditor's office. Mm-hmm. You could have chosen to get an absentee ballot and have it sent to your home. That's what I've chosen to do the last several elections. I enjoy getting the ballot one day, setting it on the table, and then in a couple days later thinking, okay, I'm ready to fill that out. And I pour a cup of coffee or a glass of wine and enjoy the voting process without looking at this line. I better hurry. I better hurry. There's so many people here. It makes you nervous. So The other way of voting is satellite. And Ames will be wrapping up, or Story County. You can vote at Memorial Union today from 9 to 3. And then you can vote tomorrow at the Human Services Center at 125 South Kellogg from 10 to 4. And you can always vote at the auditor's office from now until Election Day. Their hours, 8 to 5.
Okay.
But the Ames Public Library has one more day of full voting, 10 to 4, next Saturday.
Great. And can you tell me where the auditor's office is located?
It's in Nevada.
Okay.
Yes.
So, okay.
You know,
great.
It's a pretty fall day. Get out and see some leaves and go to Nevada.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And this question is going to be more towards Taylor. Taylor, you're a leader with the ISU Democrats. Can you tell me how you decided to be part of this group and why did you get interested in politics?
What actually happened is my mom got a call to come phone bank for the Hillary campaign, and I just tagged along with her, and from there I just kept going.
People your age, who are, you know, millennial age, I think is probably around 18 to 35, are currently our largest voting base. How do you think we need to motivate people in this age group to vote?
Just looking at our early voting numbers on campus this week, I think they are motivated. I think there is a misnomer about students being apathetic. In 2016, our voting rate on campus was almost the exact same as that of the general population. I think, in general, our country needs to start voting more. We need to talk about issues more. We need to talk about what's important to people, and that gets people out to vote. Because I talk to students all day long, and they're excited to vote. They're excited to, you know, make a change. And if you look at the numbers, they're actually getting out and voting.
And I guess I'll ask this of Carolyn as well. What can we start doing to get people motivated to vote?
Educate them. Challenge them. I think an educated voter knows what we're talking about with issues. And when I say that, I say you always have a passion. One of the people you're voting for may have that same passion, or maybe they don't support what you are. You have to, and they will make a difference in your life. Those candidates can make a difference in your life. And it isn't just a candidate at your location. It's the candidates clear across the state, because all the candidates vote. So if you get out and you get active and you educate yourself on these things, you'll want to vote. You're the one that makes the change. One vote at a time.
I've had conversations with people who, you know, have two jobs, three kids, and it's really difficult for them to find time to educate themselves or to find time to really think about the election. Often they say, you know, they may not have enough time to vote. What would you say to someone like who was in that situation? And this question is for both Taylor and Carolyn.
I mean, I just wouldn't agree. I know I talk to students on campus. They say, oh, I'm not educated, so I'm not going to vote. I don't have time to look it up. That's ridiculous. It doesn't take long to look it up. All the websites are readily available. I think in general, there's a problem in our culture of that we constantly reinforce this idea that politics are bad, all politicians are bad, you know, there's no point in voting. Just in like some classes recently, I've had professors just make offhanded comments about, oh, well, you don't want to be a politician, something like that. That's what I see as a big problem, just our general culture, this idea that like anything to do with politics is bad, anything to do with electing people to office, any politician is bad. And I think that like perpetuates a culture where you're like, oh, my vote doesn't count. They're all going to be bad. That's an important place to start, too. But anyone can educate themselves.
Sure.
Just take 5 minutes out. And
I would say for the mother with children, we have to reinforce that she can get an absentee ballot. She can have that ballot at her home. It's much easier to vote at home rather than saying, oh, I don't want to take the kids down to the polling location. Kids do not like to stand in line any more than adults do. And then when you get in the polling box, you know, the child is pulling on your sweater, pulling on this and saying, I want to see. Well, that's not where you teach a child how to vote. Do it at home on your table. You got two more days to request an absentee ballot, today and tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
At 5 o'clock is the cutoff line. So think about how you can make that. And that's what, if you see those names, you can make a decision. So you won't make a mistake.
Part of my background is that I did grow up in a, you know, a more poor family. And I think that sometimes people who live in poverty feel like they can't, they don't have a voice in politics, or that they don't have a say in what happens. So, you know, I find that it's hard to sometimes motivate people who are in more marginalized groups. What would you say to someone who was in a more marginalized group to try to help motivate them to vote?
On the day you were born as an American citizen, you had the right when you turned age 18 to vote. It didn't make any difference, you know, how poor you were, how rich you were. When you turned 18, you get to vote as an American citizen. And your vote is as important as anybody's then. Mm-hmm. And don't marginalize yourself. It's important.
How about you, Taylor Hart? What is your opinion on that?
I think that kind of ties into why maybe sometimes young people don't vote. I think when you're from a marginalized community, you can see how many things that need to be fixed in the world, how many, you know, things seem to be stacked against you.
Mm-hmm.
And that can make you think, okay, how can my vote change that?
Sure.
I was just talking to someone the other day, you know, that our vote is just one tool, like, in our democratic toolbox. It's a little cheesy. But it is an important one. And so will it solve every single issue, your vote? No, but it's a step in the right direction. So that's what I would tell people.
Sure. And I, you know, I should further say, I mean, part of when I grew up, growing up poor, I mean, it was something that most of my family didn't get involved in politics, so I didn't have a good role model for that. And I think that's important. I didn't really become more interested in politics till, you know, my mid-20s, as I became more educated and more comfortable feeling like I had a place to say something. So, you know, that's something that sits in my mind sometimes of how to motivate people. So I really appreciate you both thinking about that.
I've been working out at Memorial Union at the Satellite. I did mm-hmm. two full days there this week. And one of the fun things about working there is celebrating the 18-year-old who has voted for the first time.
Oh, yes.
Over the years, when you work in these different places, many people say, I voted in every election since I was age 18. And I remind them, you're 18, you voted. You can say that when you're 65 if you practice mm-hmm. your option to vote.
Definitely.
So it's a challenge for life. So,
mm-hmm. So Taylor, I know that sometimes students here in Ames, and I had this experience as an undergrad as well, don't necessarily know that they can actually vote in the local election. Mm-hmm. They think they have to, you know, vote at home in their home state or home county. And the reality is they can actually register here. Mm-hmm. But what issues do you think happen here in Story County and in Iowa that would motivate students to vote in our local election here? What issues face students? Because I think students sometimes feel disconnected from the local community.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, the county offices, the supervisors and stuff like that, and the mayor, mm-hmm. all in city council, they all have large effects on, you know, students' everyday life. I talked to a lot of students who are from out of state. We have a lot of students from students from Illinois here especially. Mm-hmm. I just talk to students all the time who don't know they can vote here, obviously, like you just said. But they, I say, you can elect people who will be setting, you know, the funding for your school, which affects your tuition, that sort of thing. Also, we have the chance to elect a new congressman this year. I know a current congressman in the 4th District.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite controversial. And I know that a lot of students disagree with how he handles things. And I tell them, you know, you have a chance to get rid of a really terrible, in my opinion, congressman, and that
sure.
seems to motivate people as well.
Sure. Well, that's good to know that you're talking to people and that you're able to point out different aspects that may motivate them mm-hmm. To vote in one direction or another.
Yeah. One thing that really frustrates me is that pretty much the ISU College Democrats are the only ones on campus doing any sort of voter education.
Really? That's interesting to hear.
Nothing from the school. There's a civic engagement committee through student government, which has done next to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
No communication with the school about the early voting location, not a peep. So it's really falling on students. It's falling on a student organization to turn out our students. And I think that's really terrible when this is an institution of higher education.
Yeah. What are some of the creative ways that you've been able to get the word out that mm-hmm. about early voting and voting in general with the students?
Well, we do chalk on the chalk, on sidewalks. We went around to almost every single classroom on campus and wrote about early voting on the whiteboards, mm-hmm. of course, social media. But nothing is better than on campus. We've had, like, I would say 10 to 15 volunteers from our club every day this week on campus running around everywhere with these little flyers saying, have you voted yet? Have you voted yet? Have you voted yet? Okay, are you going to go vote tomorrow? Okay, what time are you going to go vote? You know, mm-hmm. are you registered already? Okay, if you're not registered, you need to do this. And it's just like the grind, right, to get people out, but it works.
Oh, that's great. I'm hearing that there are some, that the rates on campus for voting are interesting this year. Can you tell me more about the numbers and mm-hmm. how many people have been voting already in the early voting?
Yeah. So in 2014, the last midterm election, a total of 682 people voted on the on-campus voting location. And as of yesterday, 1,363 had voted. So we've already doubled turnout on campus from 2014. And we still have today. So and usually the last day of early voting on campus gets the largest turnout because students like to procrastinate, of course. So I'm hoping we can get over 2,000, but that might be a little optimistic. We'll see.
Yeah, that's great. That's actually really encouraging to hear that it's doubled or more mm-hmm. than doubled already. That's mm-hmm. that's amazing. And I hope that continues throughout the years because, you know, some elections tend to spur more motivation for people than others, but we want to make sure that people realize that every election should motivate them because it's very important. So that's really great to hear. So if I guess now I'm curious, what other things about voting or motivation do you wish the ISU Democrats were doing, or not the ISU Democrats, but Iowa State University was doing mm-hmm. for you, for the students?
Yeah, well, just this might sound crazy. There's not a single place on campus that you can go permanently to register to vote.
Okay.
So, for example, I had this crazy roundabout experience. I had an aunt of a student contact a representative, Beth Weissel-Koschel, who contacted me, who connected me to the aunt, who connected me to the student, and I had to find that student on campus in order to register them to vote because they had to fill out a paper ballot. That's the kind of stuff that students go through on campus, and it's not a single place on campus to do that. So that's one thing.
Wow.
There's like 1,000 things they could do. Just even send out an email saying, hey, students, there's an early voting location. That didn't happen this year. Statement from Wendy Winterstein, anything. So I think there's a lot of improvement, and so we'll keep pushing for it after the election. Mm-hmm.
And I think that comes from a state of Iowa, from the Secretary of State, needs to look at educating Iowans on how to register and getting into the universities. We need some – I just am very frustrated on – the state of Iowa does not fund educating the Iowans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in the Iowa code, it says that state universities and private universities that receive state funding must provide an opportunity to register to vote to all students. So they're not – I don't think they're fulfilling their legal responsibility either, let alone their moral responsibility to create informed citizens.
Yeah. The next year will be city and state, so it's going to be huge because you have to have a voter ID next year or your license. So that's going to take a huge education, and that's going to affect the people who have voted for those 40 years.
Wonderful. Well, we are running short on time. I would love to talk to both of you more about this because there's lots of fascinating aspects to all of it. I'd like to thank KHOI Community Radio 89.1. You tuned into KHOI Community Radio 89.1 Story City in Ames and local surrounding areas. This is Local Talk in the monthly Ames Progressive Alliance segment. You can keep up with APA activities on the Ames Progressive Alliance Facebook page and our website, amesprogressivealliance.org. I also encourage you to go online and look up information about the election via the auditor's office as well as individual candidates and you can Google all that information and find out what you need to know to vote. We hope you get out there and vote this year. Thank you. And thank you to our guests.
And thank you, Carolyn Myers with Ames Progressive Alliance, and her guests, Carolyn Klaus from the League of Women Voters, and Tyler Blair, Iowa State student and president of the ISU Dems and plaintiff in the Iowa Voters ID lawsuit. And thank you for listening to Local Talk. Our Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 5 p.m. on Friday here at KHOI. And remember, you can hear this show online, on demand, on our website, khoifm.org, later in the day. And that KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from the Ballad of Kate Shelley CD. And remember to register to vote. The website for information is vote411.org. And remember that you, the listener, you, the voter, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. That's workinames.com.